Hello and welcome to MikeyPod episode number 129. Today's guest is Gavin Castleton, and we'll be talking about his new album, Home, which was just released Friday the 13th. Actually, you'll probably be hearing this no earlier than Monday the 16th of February. And why that's important, I don't know, because I think people listen to these when they do. And you already know that because you're currently listening to this when you are. Anyway, this album is amazing. Check it out. And I know you're going to want to after you hear this album. Support this and every artist you hear on this show. All of them are freely giving their music to me to play, to share with you. And it's important to support independent music as, you know, as we all know, the corporate music sort of kingdom is dying. And I think that's a good thing because now there's more of a chance for people like Gavin to be heard. So listen, enjoy, and here's a track from the new album. This track is the first one I heard. It's called Coffee Locks, and what the hell? Like, when I first listened to this, I already liked Gavin's music, but I heard this song, and there were so many layers of, like, what? What? Where is this song going? I don't know. That's me trying to put into words my feelings while listening to this song. Didn't work so well. Maybe you'll have them as well. This song is called Coffee Locks from Gavin Castleton's Home.
The shop and the windows broke. The coffee crashing down as this angel spoke. I might have survived if it weren't for her eyes that were eating mine up. She wanted a job, so I brought her the forms with my eyes held shut. Was this love?
I wanna know.
Walked into the shop expecting nothing but noise.
was Coffee Lux by Gavin Castleton, who is joining me now from Portland, right, Gavin? Is that where you are?
Yes, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, so welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Well, there's a baby in the background.
Yeah, can you hear that? I just had a baby.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's the song. The song just put me in the right mood.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So the album in general, you could probably say it better than I can, but it tells the story of a 6-year relationship and the ending of it, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It kind of does it beginning to end, actually. Over the course of the whole thing, it pretty much spans the whole thing. It just says sum it up very condensed version of it, I think.
Yeah. So the song Coffee Lux, it's in the beginning of the album, so I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's the second song, and it's kind of like the Love at First Sight track where I'm working in a coffee shop, and then the girl comes in, and I get pumped, and then and we kind of flirt a little bit. It's very nervous. And then after that, it just sort of turns into the romance. And actually, what I just was thinking about when I said it was condensed is that I actually had to employ a montage track. So track 5 is like an actual montage, which I don't know if that's ever been done in music before, but I guess it probably has. But it has to sum up some 4 years of good times in 4 minutes, pretty much.
Yeah. Which one is the montage?
That's a track called Stampede. It's number 5.
Oh, okay.
It sort of like sounds like Prince meets ABBA or something, and it's just talks about like the good old times, kind of.
Every now and then, I get a hint of Prince that I can't really like pinpoint. Is he? Well, I guess with your "Nothing Compares to You," you did as well. I guess it's safe to say.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
fan.
Yeah. The crazy thing is, I'm not the biggest fan. Not that I'm not a fan, but just that I can't claim to have like been invested in his music very long. I'm aware of it, and I enjoy it, and I think he's an incredible performer. But I'm not like the guy who can sing all his lyrics or like do his dance moves. I'm not. He's just such a prolific songwriter.
Yeah.
He's so busy.
He really is.
And yeah, he has like a vault of songs, so that he can continue releasing songs for years after he's dead.
Yeah.
I've heard that when he wants to make an album, he just goes to the vault, pulls out 10 songs or 15 songs or whatever, and just makes an album. Like, it's already done. That's my impression.
He almost needs a filter, though, too, in what actually gets released.
Sometimes. Yeah, that's not untrue. You're totally right about that.
Yeah, so back to your album. Do I understand correctly that your ex wrote some of the lyrics that are on the album?
Yeah. Yeah, we collaborated on a few of the tracks, on 3.5 of them-ish. When we first started breaking up, I asked her if she would write the female leads for it.
Uh-huh.
Sort of as a way of being fair, I think, and as a gesture of collaboration, which I thought was sort of an equalizing tactic for the relationship, but it got really strenuous. So we, after a bunch of the songs, we didn't really do that much more.
Yeah.
So that's why it kind of did 3 or 4, you know, 3.5 songs or so. But then I ended up having to write the female lead lyrics for a few of them, and just like in real life, the album sort of ventures off into the solo kind of land after 6 or 7 songs.
Yeah. So with the story is true until there's a zombie attack, right?
Yeah, true is a relative term. I think it's I mean, like, the whole montage of how we met is very true, and our relationship is very true, but to every element of the record, the whole idea was this very cinematic element. Everything's a little bit Hollywood and a little bit larger than life. And then, like in a real breakup situation, that sort of dramatic tendency gets so overblown by the end that you should leave the listener wondering if the narrator isn't a little bit tapped.
Right.
And unaware of what his surroundings. So I think that, like, I think that it is realistic, and if I have to be painfully honest, there weren't actually zombies that tried to kill me, but
it could have happened.
It totally could have happened, and I was delirious enough at the time that it seemed realistic, you know.
Yeah. So I'm trying to, like, maybe there's not an answer to this question, but I'm trying to, like, make an exact, like, parallel to what the zombies represent. Uh-huh. Is that, like, a reasonable question?
Yeah, it's probably the most important question. Part of me wants to hesitate and make people figure it out themselves or decide, because I think it's I think it can vary. To me, it's a metaphor for the layers of a relationship that eat away at it over time.
Mm-hmm.
Very slow, plodding kind of destruction to something beautiful. So that's why the zombies are the perfect tool for that, is because the vehicle for that, I should say, that they that it's like a slow thing, you know? It's all these little things that happen throughout the relationship that eventually eat it alive, but it's not like an immediate kind of thing. You know, like, it's not like a vampire, you know? Could have done vampires, but, but that would be, you know, that would just be a really short album because it would just kill me immediately.
Yeah, because vampires move a lot faster than zombies.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing. They have to be slow zombies. You can't do any of this new age crap where it's like fast running, rabid zombies. This is like the boring kind that, like, you know, you can kind of put hats on and run around and taunt until there's too many of them.
then you're doomed.
Totally caught. Yeah.
So I was looking at the album. We talked about this a little bit before. The song Unparalleled Rabbits is similar in some ways to a song called Bad Rabbits from your album For the Love of Pete.
Yeah.
Let's discuss.
Yeah, there's a few instances throughout the record of what I would call time coding, by way of these correlating melodic structures or themes or lyrics, and basically that's sort of a subtle note to my listeners that actually follow multiple releases, where it tells you where in the story I am in relation to other releases. It was really important with this one that it tied together every album I've ever done in a way. So there's this time coding factor where in that one, for instance, Unparalleled Rabbits, it starts with this melody. And that same melody is the beginning of Bad Rabbits. Bad Rabbits, which was written in 2005, I think. And it was when we kind of broke up for the first time for a second. So I use it again in Unparalleled Rabbits as a kind of a way of saying this song, what the happenings of this song actually take place in 2005, and you know it's relating to the things that happened in that song, in Bad Rabbits, the original song. Do you understand what I mean? It's kind of like road markers, but
yeah.
A timeline. So, and it's a way of tying it to these other things so you can see their relevance. You can understand what Bad Rabbit... It may bring better understanding to some of those old songs and some of those other albums that people didn't realize the full meaning of or what they correlate with in my current work, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. It made me start wondering, because I haven't been following your work for that long, probably 6 months to a year, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But then I heard that, I noticed the similarities in the beginning there, and it made me wonder, uh-huh, like, so wait a minute, where in the relationship was For the Love of Pete released? So, yeah, it's a very considerate thing that you do to make those connections.
Thanks.
Hey, sure.
I didn't even think about it as, like, a nice thing. I think of it more as like a treat for people that I think there's a lot of it. That's kind of what my blog is entirely centered around, is is tying those things together and expanding on the narratives in them so that people can understand more how everything relates. Because
right.
I think that my career path is kind of a. There's a trajectory to it. You can follow why I go the paths that I go in each of these records, and that they all are accumulative, and they all lead up to my next record, and that one, this record will directly influence my next record. And I'm kind of obsessive about my career and my work in general being one long thought, you know, one long piece that relates to itself, not just a bunch of scatterbrain ideas that are, like, I felt like doing a hip-hop album, so I did a hip-hop album. It's more like it ties into everything, and more importantly, I learned from it, and my next thing is influenced by it, kind of thing like that. So the blog does that too. The blog fills in a lot of the spaces of the record. It's right now I'm filling in the spaces between the songs in Home, and I'll do more of that. And it fills in between a lot of the songs in A Bullet Lever Key, which was the album before that. And it's tying this album to all the other albums, so people can understand how it can relate creatively. You know.
Yeah, I like also the way I saw on your YouTube page all the videos of recording different tracks from the song, different instruments, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's really cool, too. I mean, I think it's a really interesting way to invite people into what's going on. Was it hard for you to put that stuff out there? Like, it seems like in some ways I would feel a little like, I don't know if I want people to see this part of the process.
Yeah. I think there's definitely cringe moments all over the place, especially if I think vocal performances without backing tracks. And yeah. I think the comments on the thing will reflect that some of my snarkier friends will tend to leave me comments like, that maybe I should work on my falsetto, or maybe I should... you know, look into other career options. So I definitely think it's pretty naked in that sense. I think that the album itself is extremely naked. And I think that it was really important to me in the whole process of the breakup and trying to grow as a person to really allow myself to be that exposed and not do instinctually. I think humans, when they experience massive rejection, want to curl up in a ball and go armadillo style. But I'm just trying to fight that as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's healthy. So I'm sort of doing the opposite. And also in all my work, I've always been very, very committed to open sourcing and trying to be as educational to anyone that wants to know anything about my stuff, my work, the way I do things. I generally am very open about it because I don't think secrecy helps anyone grow. So I think it relates to that. I think that it's I think that the videos are definitely a piece of that. The blog is a piece of that. I'm very, very, very candid, much to the terror of my close family and friends, I think.
Yeah. But it's a good, I mean, to me, it's really a positive thing because it makes the art more about you than just this album that to the listener feels somehow removed. You know what I mean? Like a product.
Yeah. I think so. I it's important that I would like people to feel like they know me when they hear my stuff, and I would like them to feel like I'm approachable, even though I technically don't have any time to talk to anybody. I still feel like I've actually been talking about this quite a bit lately with friends, that I really don't like the distance between people and the artists that they want to respect and to support. In this country, I think it's all too common to have artists held up on a pedestal and be completely unapproachable and on some weird echelon, like they're a better person than someone else, you know?
Right.
So I hope to affect that a little bit by not being that. I think it'll be strenuous for me, but I think it's a good, you know, badge to carry.
The song Unparalleled Rabbits I mentioned and then continued talking. So we should back up to it, and
okay.
I'm going to play it next, but
cool.
Tell me the story of this. Like, where in the whole line
okay.
of the relationship
yeah, so this
fall?
This is after we have been chased by zombies, and we drive away. There's like a car chase scene, and then we arrive at this abandoned supermarket, and we kind of hole up in there and stack dog food in front of the window so they can't see us, and kind of survive in there on dog food. And then over the course of however long we're in there, she starts to get antsy and has been secretly repairing the communication system to make contact with the outside world. Well, I'm insisting that there's plenty of food in here and that we should just be curmudgeons. So, and then at the end of it, the military comes in to retrieve her, and zombies manage to break in as they're getting away, but I decide to stay.
Let's give it a listen. This is Unparalleled Rabbits.
I guess it couldn't last, this burrow that we keep, this haven from the feast. We hear them in the day, we see them in our sleep. You said you wanna leave, you wanna see the world and figure out what's left. I know what I saw, I want the rest. We got breakfast cereal galore, but you say the milk's gone bad. I'm thinking, is that a metaphor? You say what at first felt safe now feels trapped, and making love in this place is just a tribute to the past. But I have no complaints, I block out the screaming with the sound system found in the back. I say the problem isn't us, it's a world insisting on itself. But you insist there's no health to be found, just eating off the shelf. You put your hand on my heart and push me back a little, like you wanna be a part of, maybe wanna make it start up again. Baby, I know that I'm starting to act just like them. I feel verbally inept, I can't say the reassuring things that you need me to say. So I just say it's killing us to fight this way, and you reply what killed us was a succession of ordinary days. And I resent the past tense, I wanted to defend the thing, but now we're hearing shots from the roof, and hear this clean army boy drops through the vent calling you by name. If this was rescue, then why'd you look ashamed? There is no way to pay in the missile and break the varied healing temples of the giver and the take. And here I suffer with the thought of her on a roll. But all the while my love had been in service in the telephone. There is no greater pain than the missile I break the varied healing temples of the giver and the take. When you can't sing or say your promise with no one who leads, you focus less on your direction than more on your speed.
That was Unparalleled Rabbits from Gavin Castleton's new release, Home. And I wanted to ask about the process of this album. It seems that one of your goals, I don't remember if I just read this or I'm creating it in my own mind, but was to sort of have a way to heal your sense of loss from the relationship. Did I create that, or is that said somewhere?
Is it that the album is a way to deal with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of the thesis statement of the final song on the record called Credits. And I have talked about that a little bit in interviews recently, that that ultimately the record was initially about so many different things and was had so many different missions for it, and there were so many different reasons I wanted to make it. And then in the end I realized, the whole evolution of the story really was changing daily, because I was doing it real time, and it was really important to me to not to write the story as it was unfolding. So I didn't know the message until the very end. When I wrote the very last song, literally on the very last day of mixing, I finished the last vocal take and the last lyric. And the message turned out to be that that there wasn't really a perfect way to cope with heartbreak, and there wasn't really and you can't really go by everyone else's prescription of what you should do, that ultimately the process is what's important, not how you end up. I mean, if you pay more attention to the process, how you end up will be much better off. And because I remember feeling like people really want to rush me through that process. And mine was pretty long. It took me a real long time. But I think that people ultimately, for their own comfort, just want you to kind of shut up.
Right. Like, right.
Stop whining. Stop sitting around in your room all day. And so I think that I wanted it to be sort of a hug to people dealing with it, saying, you take as long as you need, that it's not really anyone's business how long it takes. And if they love you, they'll wait for you to deal with it. And that if you really allow things to heal in the proper way and you really pay attention to them, that ultimately you're going to be a much better person for it. And so the album represents the process itself. And I designed it to heal myself, and then and that's why I want to give it to people so that they can use it for the same thing. Or at least it would encourage them to come up, to have a process, to pay more attention to process than anything. Because how humans process things, this affects everything about how they are later, afterwards, and how damaged they are, how well adjusted they are, you know?
Yeah. So was so much of what you, the story you tell in the album, especially with the song Oregon, it seems, I mean, you're really specific and personal and precise about what you're going through. Was there ever a time when you were working on the album or writing these songs that you felt like you couldn't deal with doing that? Like that it got too big?
Yeah, actually it got too big a lot. That happened. That's why it took 2 years. There would be long phases between, but something my brain is pretty good at, compartmentalizing stuff. So when there were so many threads running through everything and so much to do, because I intended it to be the most massive piece I could do, that there was a long period of time where I couldn't write lyrics, half because I didn't want to define what would happen. I wanted it to define itself, and I felt like I can't write the next step. I have to wait until it happens, and it's sometimes just waiting, taking a while to happen. And sometimes this, I knew the lyrical content of what I needed to say was just so miserable that I couldn't dwell in it, because I was already so physically afflicted by what was happening. So, but there were always, like, creating music was the only thing that would heal me. Or I think it's how I make myself happy every day. So there was always something to do. If I wasn't working on track 7, let's say I'm like it's somewhere in 2007, I think, late 2007, I'm working on track 7 or track 8, I just can't deal, I would go back and be working on some of the orchestral arrangements for track 2, or I will, you know, I'll just kind of, I really jump around. I'm very ADD in that sense, that I will just plow through stuff and be doing it. Or I could be tweaking lyrics for the first ones. I'd be recording demos. I could actually go out. There was a time when I hadn't finished writing the last 3 or 4 songs, but I was tracking certain instruments for the other one. Wait a minute. Maybe that's not true. I think that's true. I would kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I would, there was always something I could do, even if the lyric, it's really the lyrical content that's going to be the biggest strain. The music itself, parts of it are so somber and sad to me that if I hear it, it would affect me. But that doesn't happen in the demoing process quite as much. It's right, more, you just get excited making music. It's really fun. So I feel like I always had something to jump around to. If it got too much emotionally to handle the lyric process or the vocal process, I'd just do something else. And worst comes to worst, I could just work on a website or something.
Just move entirely away from it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the orchestral arrangements. Did you do all those as well?
Yeah, I did. I did every note on the record. I can say is my mistake, except for incredible props should be given to my good friend Brian Cass, who was pretty much the only other creative element that had input on the record for the most part. I mean, that's not 100% true, but he was somebody that came in during the production process when we were mixing and really helped me sculpt some of the stuff even finer and really fine-tune the sounds and the production and a lot of the electronic arrangements and sequencing. Mm-hmm. He influenced. I think I'm such a stickler for rhythm that I'm responsible for all the rhythm and all the melody and all the harmony. But a lot of times he was instrumental in giving the shape, the sound shape, and in realizing some of these ridiculous demands that I was making about the production. Like I would say to him, this part has to sound like it's underwater in track 3. And then it has to sound like it comes out of water. And that's the only kind of guidance that I can say. And he actually came up with this ingenious way of doing it. In a very creative way with sound synthesis and the way that we did it. So pretty much, you know, orchestral arrangements, vocal arrangements, all the keyboards, and then every other note by every other instrument I wrote and wrote out and gave to the people, and then they came and played it, and then I edited it and sequenced it. So,
did you record it all at home?
No, I didn't have a home for most of the album. I ended up being homeless for most of it because I couldn't deal with that house anymore where we live. So I, after the demoing was mainly done, when we started tracking, I was pretty much between coasts, and I was just living out of my car and at friend's house. Rob Pemberton, the engineer, was incredibly generous and let me stay at his house for a whole month while we mixed. And we recorded at remote places all around New England. We recorded at a few different studios and a lot at Rob's house. And I tracked some stuff in my house, a guitar at my house, at the house, the haunted house, right before I left. But then we did bass and drums at a studio in Providence, and we did a studio in Boston, a little bit in New York. We're kind of really floating around.
Oh, wow. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It's very modular. The process was like, I'll go and record the string section, the string section, and they'll play the whole record. We'll do all the strings. And then we'll go and do all the percussion at once. We'll do all the brass at once. You know, it's kind of like, and very organized the way that I record.
Okay.
Because I don't have any money.
Yeah, I guess you have to be.
Yeah. I can't just hang out in the studio. Like, I have to use every 5 seconds to do something. So.
Yeah. So after the song Oregon, uh-huh, we meet these ladybugs. Are there two of them? Or am I?
There are two of them. There's, yeah, a fat one, a short fat one, and a tall skinny one.
Oh,
they kind,
wow,
of look like Mario Luigi. And they generally, in that song, you should picture them kind of holding hands and bobbing up and down. And then like kind of raising their hands together like champions when they're sort of praising.
So they kind of show up to rescue you from Oregon,
yeah,
in a way.
Yes, they do.
And
not from what, from the song, Oregon.
Yeah, from the song. That's what I meant.
I'm actually, the song's situated in Rhode Island, but it's looking towards Oregon, kind of.
Yeah. So, is there any other significance of these ladybugs?
Yeah. In before I left that house, there were more and more of them. They infested the whole house, and I was interacting with them on a very regular basis. Taking showers with them and sleeping with them and stuff. and they were down my pants.
Wait, so...
That just happened one time. There was one in my pant leg. I don't mean that there was anything intimate with them. But
I don't judge. I mean...
But they... Yeah, there were this element. So I used to write about them a lot in the blog. And there's this narrative that follows through the blog called the Ladybug Saga that sort of follows the path of my interaction with them. It becomes pretty supernatural when they started spelling out words to me and stuff in a bathtub. So it was just a really tripped out experience. So they act as sort of sentinels in the album, I think. And they show up and they pull me out of the literal guts of the situation and instruct me to write a happier ending to it.
So that brings us to the whole notion, or I guess not a notion, because this is the real story. There are two endings for the song, for the album. Like, Oregon, was it originally intended to be the ending?
Well, my intentions for everything just kept shifting. The first intention was when I scripted it and wrote the first step before the lyrics were written, but the music was written, there were going to be alternate endings for the album that wouldn't be released. One would not be released very gently. Or we would release it later or something. Like, I had these plans to kind of have two options and release them depending on which I felt the most allegiance to at the time. So, but then I realized that that wasn't the right way to end it, and that you should be presented both options and then told that neither is the actual option, because I didn't go with either of the options. There was the super dark, depressing, suicidal option, then there was the super happy escape to the island ending, and neither one of those is very realistic. So I presented them both, and then I wrote a last piece to step outside of the record and look at both of them and talk about them as coping mechanisms.
And that would be credits, right?
That would be credits is the one, is like the thesis statement that talks about it, and that sort of breaks the fourth wall and isn't really isn't part of the story. It sort of steps outside and looks at the album as a unit, you know, or looks at it as a coping mechanism itself, and more it discusses like why I would use that process as a way of dealing in general.
Gotcha.
It's sort of an Charlie Kaufman thing to do, where it's all of a sudden you're not, you know, you're, it's like an aside to the audience, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and then it talks about those, it kind of refers to those last two songs, The Human Torch and Oregon, which are the super happy and the super sad.
Gotcha. And with the Beatles in between.
With the Beatles in between, right. instructing me.
So with the process of this album, was it helpful for you? Do you feel like it did its job as far as helping you to heal?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, you sound
it's miraculous. But thanks, I'm very healed now. It's really weird, but I totally am.
Wow. Yeah,
it took a long time, a really excruciatingly long time. But I was really delighted to find that it worked. I think right when it was done, I wasn't sure, but then I am sure now that it did, which is why I'm very confident to give it to other people as a tool. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's available now on iTunes.
Yep.
And then there'll be a hard copy of it available when?
April 7th. It should be available everywhere on hard copy with this glorious artwork by my friend Justin Muir, and photography by my friend Ryan Rogers, that both did incredibly good jobs with the visuals. So it's great because it adds this whole visual element to the album that you might not necessarily get with the digital copy.
Yeah.
And there's a lyric sheet in that one that's kind of important, I think, because I have a stuffy nose.
So cool. I'm looking at the album cover. I just noticed that there's a ladybug in one of your eyes in the...
And there's the zombies together. Yeah.
That's amazing.
There's a theme throughout the whole thing of this red and blue and these two different paths that you could take. It's sort of the dark and the light. It's a little bit trite in that sense, but we really wanted to drive it home with those primary colors on the cover. I think it's a very powerful image.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's sweet. So yeah, well I guess that's all we've got. I want to play the song The Human Torch, awesome. Which was the happy ending.
Yes, super happy.
And
there's a little nod to like Mega Man in there too. See if you can catch it. That's like the happiest. when I'm at my happiest is when I'm playing Mega Man.
Cool. Excellent. So any other? I guess your website is gavincastlin.com.
Yeah,
and the blog
I'm
is
giving it a facelift, which I'm behind schedule, but only because of you know, all sorts of ridiculous things I'm doing right now. So myspace.com is a good place, / Gavin Castleton is a good place to hear some songs. And actually right now we're streaming the whole record at purevolume.com/Gavin Castleton. They were kind enough to give us a full album feature, so it's a good place to listen to the whole thing and see if you like it. And if you do, if you pick it up at iTunes, Napster, Rhapsody, or whatever your digital preference, I would encourage people to give it to people going through a rough time.
Yeah. The people,
especially Valentine's Day, because Valentine's Day kind of sucks.
Yeah, people get upset about it.
Yeah.
And most people I know don't like Valentine's Day.
But totally.
So, yeah. Well, all right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. This is really fun.
Jungle affair with a porcupine fence and a soul.